Vishnu Sahasranama, Shlokam 8. Ishanaf Pranadaf Prano Jishta Shreshtaf Prajapatihi Hiranyagarbho Bhugarbho Madhavo Madhusudanaha. Name 65, Ishana, which means the controller. Ishavasya midam sarvam. Everything here in this world is controlled by the controller. So this is a well-known name for what in the English language is vaguely referred to as God, is in Sanskrit or Indian languages, Ishvara. So this is similar to the name Ishvara. Ishvara is also understood to mean the, from Ishvara we have the word Aishvarya. But Ishana particularly emphasizes the quality of controlling. So the important point here, or the main point, is that this clearly distinguishes him from all others. He is the one control. He is the controller. We are controlled. The existence of God is a question that has been debated over the centuries, whether or not there is God. And particularly at the present time, the atheistic fold under the leadership, the controller of the atheists, Richard Dawkins, Pride of England, is battering the theists who simply believe. So there are various arguments for the existence of God, the teleological argument, and there's some other one, I can't remember the technical name. Srila Prabhupada, he very simply established that there is God, that the fact that we are all controlled. No one can deny that we are not in control, even though we like to think we're in control. But we are controlled by the laws of nature. We are forced to suffer old age, disease, and death. And from Shastra we understand that there's rebirth also. So it's not rest in peace, but you have to get back again to some situation, not peaceful situation. So there are laws that control us. The scientists are busy studying the laws of nature. This morning our professor friend, who at the end of every class I ever give in the manor, always has some objections. So he's a professor of mathematics. How can the atheists say that they're busy studying science, which is largely based on mathematics, and how can they say the whole universe is by chance if there are mathematical laws? So Srila Prabhupada would make this very simple argument. The fact that we are controlled means that there's a controller. Simple to understand. David Hume, he said, well, maybe there's more than one. So that he wanted to disprove this argument for the existence of God, that there is a controller. He wanted to disprove that by saying that, well, it doesn't mean that there's one controller. There could be more than one. But then if you accept that there's a controller or controllers, at least we have to understand that we are controlled by a higher power. and that at least that point we should accept. So what, who is that power or powers? That's a question which follows on from that. But if we accept, as we should do, that we are controlled, therefore there is a controller, or maybe controllers, that should be accepted. And how to get information about that? Well, how to understand who that is? Then we have to find out from those who understand how they... Just like we can understand that there's a government in this country. We can't, anyone who comes to this country from any other country can understand that there's a government, because we see that things are going on in a, it's a complex society. The organization of it is complex, but the, it's going on. Just even to drive a car from one place to another, you have to know the traffic rules, which are somewhat complex. If you don't know them, or if there's no government to make rules, make roads, make traffic lights, make traffic laws, then driving would be a lot more difficult and dangerous than it is. So it's easy to understand that there is a government. But what is the nature of that government? How it exercises its control? To find that out, well, we should ask someone who knows, and they can tell us. Yeah, please move forward. So in the same way, or we can get some books which explain about all this. So in the same way, we can intelligently understand that there is a system of control. Then how to find out? Well, we have to find out from those who know, from the authorized books of knowledge. And the authorized books of knowledge tell us that there is a supreme controller. There are sub-controllers also, but there is one supreme controller, Ishvara Parama Krishna. His name is Krishna. So in this, one can come to this country and one can understand that there's a system of government. In any system of government, there's a supreme controller. But who is he? Just by intelligent deduction, one cannot understand what is his name. What's his wife's name? What he eats for breakfast? For that you have to find out from someone who knows. So in the same way that there is a supreme controller, that is stated, or that we can understand who he is, what he looks like, where he lives, what he likes to eat, that we cannot understand simply by deduction, but we can understand from those who know. So he is that person who is the supreme controller. That is Krishna. And this important point that there's one supreme controller, which means that all others are subordinate. So there are many names here in Vishnu Sahasranam, and several are coming up, which indicate his superiority to all others. And the basic principle of his being superior to all others, which is the meaning of God, is that he controls and others are controlled. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arshabhritta Jare Joiche Nachai Tare Toiche Kare Nirta. There is one supreme controller, Krishna, and all others are his servants. As he makes them to dance, in that way they dance. So it is his position to control. It just as our constitutional position is to be controlled, it's his constitutional position to control. So that means that we should serve him. We can defy him or deny him and defy him. But if we accept our constitutional position of service to him, then we become properly situated and happily situated as he is happy. So just like our position, Jiva Swarup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das, the constitutional position of the living being is to serve Krishna. So in the same way, Krishna's constitutional position, Krishna Swarup Hoy Jiva Nitya Prabhu, his eternal constitutional inherent position is to dominate others. So generally we don't like to hear this, that we are dominated and controlled by others. But it's a fact. And when we like to hear it, then we become properly situated. As long as we don't like to hear it, then we're in Maya. And we have to suffer the pangs of repeated birth and death while pretending to ourselves and others that we are in control. When we're not in control. We're just thinking we are. Ishvaro hamaham bhogi. I am the enjoyer. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer. But the proper happy position is simply to acknowledge Krishna's supremacy. Pavantame vanu charan nirantara prashanta nishesha manoratantara kadahamaikantika nitya kinkaraf praharshi ishami sanatajita. Yamunacharya, a great devotee, is praying for the time to come. Of course, he's already situated like that. When he will be fully situated in his constitutional position of service to Krishna, he will accept Krishna as his master, Krishna will accept him as his servant, and in this way the jiva becomes fully peaceful and happy, being free from material desires. So we may think that I am the controller, but actually we are either controlled directly by Krishna or controlled by Maya. And then we're controlled by material desires. Although we may think we're free to do what we're like, we are pulled here and there by our senses. So Krishna is the actual controller, which means also that he is in control of everything. He's also in control of his senses. His apparently lusty affairs is not like that of a human being. He deliberately engages in those for the sake of his own pleasure. But he's not like us, pulled by our senses. So this is most important point to understand, that there is a supreme controller, and if we cooperate with him, just like in a state, if we cooperate with the government, if the state is not despotic, then we can live comfortably and happily within the state. But if we try to deny the jurisdiction of the government over us and break the laws, then we'll be punished by the government. So, on the cosmic platform also, if we accept Krishna is the supreme controller, let me cooperate with him, then we remain happily in his service. Name 66 is Pranada, and 67 is Prana. So, Prana, I'll just briefly touch that first of all. Prana means life. Life breath, vitality. Jivanam sarva bhuteshu. Krishna says, I am the life of all living beings. So Krishna is pranada. He gives life. We are living beings. We are part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is life. We are alive because we are part and parcel of Krishna. Mamai vangsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Krishna is the supreme life and we are all part and parcel of that because he is alive, his life reflects in us, therefore we are alive. So on the mundane platform also, we may have in our bodies, we may have more or less energy. Some bodies are very energetic. Monkeys' bodies are very energetic. Others less so. Some people may be, at some stage in life, they may be very healthy. And at other stage in life, they may be just hardly they can walk. So Krishna gives life, which suggests that he also takes it away. Of course, the jiva by nature is never dead, but how much vitality we have, physical and mental, that depends on our karmic results, which are ultimately bestowed by Krishna. One symptom of Kali Yuga is that bodily strength decreases. We can cite various reasons. The food is not very good and people don't exercise properly, but it's also that these are some immediate reasons, but one reason is just the influence of Kali Yuga. Day by day, bodily strength decreases, mental strength and ability decreases. So Krishna gives life, he takes it away. That means that we may be in one, our existence is temporarily in one body, and then we're taken out of that body, the life is taken out of the body, and then we're transferred to another body. This all goes on under Krishna's direction. Karmana daiva netrena jantur deho papateya. According to our activities and under the direction of Krishna and various demigods, we attain different kinds of bodies. So Krishna gives life, Krishna takes it away. He's the life of the whole universe, Jagajivan. So on the cosmic scale also, apart from the individual jiva, the whole universe is infused with life because of his presence. In Purusha Sukta of the Rig Veda, it describes how all the different components and demigods entered into the universe, but still there was no life. But only when the Purusha, Vishnu, entered, then everything else came to life. So there may be all the arrangements within the world for everything to function, but unless Krishna gives sanction, unless Krishna gives life, nothing works. So Krishna is the giver of life. And particularly, life, real life means in Krishna consciousness. So, otherwise it's living death. One may be alive and jumping very high, or just like the Olympic Games are coming up, so someone can jump very high, or he can jump very far, can run very fast, or swim very quickly. So that is some physical life. Of course, I always wonder about these Olympic Games because you can swim quickly, but any ordinary fish can swim faster. Or one can run very quickly, but then the animals like cheetahs, they can run faster. One can pick up big heavy weights, but even a baby elephant can pick up a bigger weight than the world weightlifting champion. So, what's the use? One becomes, by the Olympic Games, one attempts to emulate various animals. So that's life. I mean, to be able to run very quickly means that you have a lot of life force, a lot of energy and vitality, strength. But it's living death. Without Krishna consciousness, it's meaningless. What's the point? You get a gold medal and everyone cheers. And then the next minute they forget you and they go off to some other, on the TV they'll show, British gold medal. They might win one this time, you never know. They usually win one or two, isn't it, the British? So British gold medal, and then immediately they get it, and then, and now for the next event, and go on to, and they just immediately forget the person who won the gold medal after so much effort. Poor people, you know, they invest so much of their life and energy into something of only symbolic meaning, and that symbolism is also useless. So real life means to be with Krishna, because if one is in Krishna consciousness, then there's no death. One lives forever with Krishna. And that's real life, because yayatma supersedati, that fully satisfies the self. Whereas no one can be fully satisfied even by winning a gold medal in the Olympics, breaking the record, and all this kind of thing. It doesn't fully satisfy the soul. Some satisfaction may be there. And also, even though it may satisfy the one person who wins the gold medal, but everyone else who doesn't, who are in, they're also in the same context, they're also dissatisfied. So, Krishna consciousness is the process by which everyone can be fully satisfied. Everyone's a winner. In this material world, we think that to be a winner, there should be some losers. There should be someone I do better than. But in Krishna consciousness, everyone wins and no one loses. So real life is to be in Krishna consciousness. And actually also we see, just like Krishna, he's dancing all night, every night, with his gopis. And that night is equivalent to one night of Lord Brahma. So you can bring any dancer or Olympic champion, and there's no hope that they could even live that long, let alone dance that long. So real life is with Krishna. We have so much energy, just like Krishna. He practically never sleeps. He's just always on the go, with all of his pastimes are supremely pleasing. So this is life. What is the use of life if one is miserable? What is the use of life without Krishna consciousness? So real life means to be in Krishna consciousness, and Krishna gives that. He gives us the opportunity to join with him in his transcendental pastimes. So that is the name of Krishna, Pranada. Yeah, we can see that who has got life in Krishna consciousness, they're very bright and alive. Someone who's in the mode of ignorance, they're completely dull. They look, their eyes are dull, their whole countenance is dull, they have no energy or no motivation, just living but practically dead. In the mode of passion, one is very active, but also very confused. In the mode of goodness, one is externally active and internally peaceful. So one becomes a little bright. In the mode of passion, one becomes becomes lively and somewhat bright, but that brightness can turn to frustration very quickly also. Whereas in the mode of goodness, one becomes bright, one's consciousness becomes bright, but in pure Krishna consciousness, one becomes resplendent and effulgent, being full of the life of love of Krishna. So name 67 is prana, which means breath, spirit, vitality, that which sustains. Life is sustained by breath. We may say, well, it's food is also essential. But breath is even more essential than food. We can go without food for a few days, maybe even many days. But without breath, without breathing, we cannot live. Some yogis, they can hold the breath for and not breathe, even for a few minutes. They can hold the breath in for a few minutes, but that's all. Without breath, we cannot live very long without breathing. So breath is that which sustains our life. So Krishna gives life. He is life. Living being, another term for living being is prani. One who has prana, one who has life. So Bhagavan is prana because he sustains the living beings. So the name prana, that means that he is the life breath, he is the vitality. But another meaning, or a broader meaning of this name, is he who sustains every living being. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo vidhati kaman. All living beings are eternal. Among them, one is supreme. And that one supreme, he sustains all the others. So therefore, Krishna is called prana. Now the next name, name 68, Jeshta. Jeshta means senior, old. So Krishna is, actually Jeshta is generally used as senior in terms of age in colloquial Indian languages. But the actual meaning is, who is the eldest? The older than the oldest. Older than all. So, God means older than all because he's the source of all. Everything comes from him. So he must be older than anyone else. If he's the source of everything, he must be older than everyone else. So he's older than the oldest, but at the same time he is prana, so he doesn't decay. He doesn't decay. We see that in the material world, time causes decay. And in old age, one loses vitality. One sense of seeing, hearing, this declines. Digestive power declines. General energy declines. Of course, there are some old people who are very sprite and chirpy. But generally, old age means everything gets worn down. One's energy becomes less. And then one's enthusiasm also becomes less. Because if it's difficult to walk from one side of the room to the other due to lack of vitality, then you don't really feel like doing anything much at all. But Krishna, even though he's older than the oldest, he's full of zip, bim. Krishna is older than the oldest, but he's also eternally young because he's not under the control of the time factor. Adyam Purusham. What is that? Advaita Machutam Anadi Vananta Rupam Adyam Purana Purusham Navayovanam Cha. He is described as the origin, the oldest person, but still always a fresh youth. So in Christian mythology, they have the idea, or the painting is there, of God looking very old. Because he's the creator of the universe, so he must be very old. And there's a painting of him with a big long beard, white beard, and looking not very happy, angry, because old people often become irritable also. Their life has become disturbed. But this is a complete misunderstanding of the nature of God. He's not under the laws of nature. He is the controller, Ishana. He's the controller of time also. So it's not that his vitality becomes depleted in course of time. So all these points about Vishnu should be understood. Brahma is sometimes referred to as Jeshta. Vridhatara means the oldest. So he's sometimes considered Jeshta because within this universe he's the first person. But he's also a child of Narayana. So if we say the oldest is Brahma, then older than him is Narayana. Now another meaning of the word Jeshta is the best. And that's also the next name, Shrestha. Name 69, Jeshta, means the best. Generally this name Shrestha in colloquial Indian languages means the best. But, that's correct, but etymologically it means the most glorious. Shreya, we know the word Shreya. That which is the most desirable or glorious. So the superlative of Shreya is Shrestha. So the most glorious, the most desirable, or the best of everything is Krishna. I'm saying Krishna, this is Vishnu Sahasranam, but we interchange the words Krishna and Vishnu. Prashasyatamo Shrestha, who is the most praiseworthy, is known as Shrestha, which it means the best, but this is how it's understood to mean the best. The most glorious. These three names that have just come here, Prana, Jeshta, and Shrestha, they also appear in that order in the Chandogya Upanishad. Prano, Vava, Jeshtascha, Shrestascha. So, Krishna is the best everything. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya shriya jnana vairagya yashchaiva shannang bhaga itingina. The meaning of Bhagawan is he who is possessed of all glorious transcendental qualities in full. So Aishvarya is generally understood to mean wealth. Everyone has some wealth. Whether it's £1 or £10 or £10 million or whatever it may be. Everyone has some wealth. But Krishna has more than everyone. In fact, everything belongs to him. And if we think I have even 1 pound, then we're a thief, because it all belongs to Krishna. So, the biggest person in this material world, those who are considered very big, they're actually the biggest rascals, because they think they have more. I guess I shouldn't say that on the boat ride tonight. Well, maybe I can get away with it. But if one thinks that anything belongs to me, then he's wrong, because everything belongs to Krishna. So Krishna is the most opulent. But he allows us to take a little. Ishavasyamidam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bhunjita magridha asya sridhanam. We should know that this universe is under the control of the Supreme Controller, and he allows us, he apportions us some amount, which we can use according to our need. But if we take more than our need, then we become a thief. So we can take a little and use it to maintain the body for the service of Krishna. But we should know that actually nothing belongs to me. Everything belongs to Krishna. Conventionally we say, this is my house. But we should understand everything belongs to Krishna. So Krishna is the best tycoon. He owns everything. Stand aside, Bill Gates. You're just a fly in the presence of Krishna. You're always in the presence of Krishna. So Aishvaryasya Samargyasya Viryasya, he's the most powerful. So power, there's physical power, just like the Olympic athletes, or the elephant, or the lion, or even the ant. He's very physical, he has a lot of physical strength. Comparative to his size, very strong. You can see ants sometimes, a lone ant is dragging a dead insect, which in the insect's mass is significantly more than that of the ant. So the ant also has a lot of vitality, a lot of physical strength. Another kind of strength is political or military strength. David Cameron isn't the most powerful person in this country in terms of physical strength. He won't be running in the Olympics, I guess. But he's not really the most powerful anyway. But politically, he's supposed to be the most powerful person in this country at the present time. Of course, prime ministers come and go, and the businessmen, they stay. They're the ones who are pulling the strings, the big businessmen. But, so there are two kinds of power, two kinds of virya, or two, we can say, most prominent kinds. There are many kinds, actually. I say this, military strength, which is often equated with political strength, and then there's mental strength, moral strength, the strength to withstand pain. So in that way, women are more strong than men, because that's supposed to be the greatest pain, is bearing children. So there are various kinds of strength, but in all respects, Krishna is the strongest. So Krishna is the best strong man. Most famous, so Krishna is the most famous, of course, on this miserable little planet. Most people nowadays are not interested in Krishna, but in the worlds above, the demigods, they are demigods because they worship Krishna, they recognize Krishna. So Krishna is the most famous. Young Brahma, Varanendra, Rudra, Maratastun, Vanti, Divya, Istavai, all the great demigods glorify Krishna. Krishna is the most famous. Even people, they don't even have the name Krishna, but they know about God. And in one sense, we can say, well, Richard Dawkins, he's the most God-conscious person in this country, probably, because all he thinks about is God all the time. How to deny that he exists. But if the non-existence of God was such an established fact, then why would he have to run around all over the world shouting and jumping up and down telling people there's no God? Indirectly, he's admitting there is, just that he doesn't want to recognize it, that's all. So, he's most famous. Most beautiful. Yeah, so Bill Gates stand aside, Miss World stand aside. Krishna's the most beautiful, and he never gets old also. So, Miss World of today is Miss Wrinkled Face of tomorrow. The sad story of every beauty queen. But Krishna doesn't need to put powder on his face to cover the wrinkles or any such thing. He's all the most beautiful, which rules out Sai Baba as being an incarnation of God. The wheelchair one. There are two famous Sai Babas. One was the wheelchair Bhagavan. He ended up his so-called Leela in a wheelchair. So, one of the most prominent symptoms of that rascal is that he is extremely ugly, which rules him out from being Bhagavan. God is not ugly. Most beautiful. Kandarpa koti kamaniya vishesha shobham. Millions of cupids can only aspire to reflect a tiny portion of the beauty of Krishna. Shyamasundaram, yam shyamasundaram achintya guna swarupam. He is blackish, beautiful, and the beauty of his form is composed of unlimited, inconceivable transcendental qualities. So this is Krishna's, he's the best of the beautiful, best in all respects. Shriya, he's the best in knowledge, he knows everything. It's been discussed elsewhere in Vishnu Sahasranam. All these points of views. The most renounced, he's not attached to anything. He's the best everything. He's the best controller. He's the best master. He's the best servant. He's the best friend. Suhridam sarva bhutanam. He's the friend of all living beings. He's the best parent. He's the best child. He's the best husband. He's the best paramour. He's the best dancer. In all respects, Krishna is the best of everything. He's the best cheater. When you get cheated, Krishna can cheat you also. So it's no use to try to cheat Krishna. He's a better cheater than us. So he's the best dancer. The devotees of Shiva, they won't agree with this. They'll say, he is Nataraj. Yes, Shiva is Nataraj. He's the king of dancers. But even Shiva is astonished to see the dancing of Krishna. So with all due respects to Shiva and his devotees, we will accept Krishna as the best dancer. Now, he's the best cook. I don't think so. That goes to Radha. And actually, she's the best dancer too. Oh, what's going on? Whoa, 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 whoa. Shrestha, what happened to the name Shrestha? Best. Well, she's the better half of Krishna. So, the feminine qualities of Bhagavan are particularly exhibited by Radha. Krishna is the most beautiful, yes, but Radha is still more beautiful. Krishna is the best singer. But Radha's singing is even more attractive because it can attract Krishna. So Radha, Krishna, ek bostu, kichu nahi be. Radha and Krishna are the same. They're the best of the best. They're the best lovers. Best love story. Best romance, everything. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Oh, Hare Krishna. I'll finish there for now. And does anyone have any questions about this? Best dresser. Krishna knows how to. Well, the modern age is already made drab clothes. Krishna dresses very attractively. So you can also, as grihasthas, you cannot, of course, in Indian culture, even now, the women, they tend to dress quite attractively compared to this, just some jeans and some dull t-shirt. But, men also, you'll find. When you go to Dwarka, you'll see the priests. They all have different, according to the day of the week, they'll have a different color of dhoti and bagal bandi. You know this bagal bandi? You tie it up, this shirt. So very attractively dressed. And traditionally in Vedic culture, men also wear earrings, gold, so many things. Because I wouldn't recommend wearing gold on your ears in London, because that started now in India, in the big cities. If for the women wearing gold earrings, someone comes and cuts them off. I mean, cut the whole earlobe off. Such nasty demons are there. So that they might do, or they just pull it off, tear off the whole earlobe. So that might not be a good idea. But men also can wear, not for sannyas. I have a copper bracelet, but that's just for health reasons. So that's part of Vedic culture. Of course, some grihasthas are very renounced, but I don't think any of you are very renounced in that respect. You're earning money, and there are different kinds of grihasthas. So you can also dress attractively for Krishna. Even this white dhoti, actually is much more attractive than this, what you're wearing. So there's some suggestions. Or if you like, you can, instead of buying gold, you can give all the money to Krishna. And but Srila Prabhupada said that even not to dress the deities in real, traditionally the temples, they had so much gold ornaments for the deities, but then again and again the temples were ransacked. The Muslim invasion, one major reason for that was to get the wealth from India was incredibly wealthy. All these rascals, they took all the wealth out of India, and then they criticized, you see, Hinduism is useless because they're all poverty stricken. So, whereas India was so wealthy when they were following their own culture. So, still now we can use the money also for printing books and so many things. Anyway, that's just a suggestion. You can reflect, devotees of Krishna can reflect the opulence of Krishna. Those who are grihastha devotees, they can do to some extent like that. That's a suggestion. So, any question?
Maharaj, thank you very much for nice class. Maharaj, I have a question.
You don't have to say that. It's become like a ritual. So, it's nice to say it, but it's not required. Yeah.
So, I heard that one's faith develops according to the state of his heart. So,
one's faith develops according to the state of one's heart. What do you mean here by heart?
Heart is like according to the qualities or the consciousness that person has acquired. I was hearing a lecture and in that I heard that
The faith develops according to the heart.
State of heart.
According to the state of the heart. I don't know. Is there any Shastric backup for that?
In Bhagavad Gita, there is a verse, Satvana Rupa Sarvasya.
Satvana Rupa Sarvasya. Yeah. What is it? Shraddhamayo Yam Purusha.
Shraddhabhavati Bharata.
Yeah.
I was thinking,
but that's within the three modes of nature, isn't it? That refers to faith within the three modes of nature. This word Shraddha in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the usage of the word Shraddha there is a bit different to that in the normal sense of just meaning faith, but it is, as you say, like a state of consciousness. So that's within the modes of nature, yeah.
So I was trying to understand that. What comes first? Is it the state of heart attracts the
devotion? Does the state of heart attract the devotion?
Or the other way around?
Or is it the devotion attracts the state of faith? Well, by nature, we are all inherently Krishna conscious, and that is revived by association with devotees. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadha Kabunai Shravana Adi Shuddha Chitte Kare Udai. We're all by nature devotees of Krishna. We all have love of Krishna inherent, dormant within us. And that becomes awakened by association with, well, specifically by the process of devotional service beginning with hearing, which comes about by association with devotees. So our faith may develop according to the kind of devotees that we associate with. Our faith in hopes for happiness in the material world, while giving us faith in bhakti, the devotees, they shatter our faith in prospects for happiness in this material world, which is an obstacle to bhakti. The state of our heart in material consciousness is Ishvaro ham aham bhogi siddho ham balavan sukhi. It's contaminated by a wrong conception of who we are as ourselves, as the enjoyers and controllers of this material world. So the first thing the devotees, what they speak is to shatter those misconceptions. We're enjoined to give up bad association and associate with devotees. Tato du sangha utsrija. What is it? Santa evasya. Tato du sangha utsrija. Satsu buddhima. Then, no, I said it just now. Santa evasya chindanti manovya sangam. Uktibihi. We are enjoined to give up bad association. Satsu sajeta buddhiman. And to an intelligent person should give up bad association and associate with devotees. And what will devotees do? They will speak in a manner to shatter our material attachments. That's the first thing. The prospects of being happy in this material world. And along with that, they will give us knowledge of our real life, our happy life, in service to Krishna. So, attraction to Krishna in the perfectional state, first we have to start approaching the perfectional state. In the beginning we should hear about the uselessness of this material world and the necessity of surrender to Krishna. In the beginning, there's a general understanding of our constitutional position as servant of Krishna, that is to be imbibed. And when that consciousness of being the servant of Krishna becomes one with our heart, when we have no other desires, then the nature of that in the realized state becomes gradually revealed to us. And also, as we're becoming purified, we hear about Krishna and his pastimes and his devotees, and as we become purified, in our purified consciousness, we may become attracted to certain associates of Krishna, and then we're directed how to develop that further. But that comes later. The state of our heart at the present time is contaminated, and our devotional feelings are good, but that is to be firmly, we have to become fixed in the conception of being the servant of Krishna.
Sometimes, Maharaj, not everyone, gets attracted to Krishna consciousness. Their heart gets attracted to different religious paths that they...
People get attracted to different religious paths. That's true.
So, is it due to their present consciousness, or is it due to the state of their heart?
Well, yeah, according to one's present state of consciousness, one will tend to be attracted. Just like that's described in Bhagavad Gita, one will be attracted in different ways. People in the mode of ignorance are attracted to eat meat, and so they would prefer some religious process in which meat eating is encouraged. That seems to make sense to them. That God gave us dominion, God gave man dominion over the world, so killing animals is required as part of your religion. So, yeah, if one is in the mode of ignorance, he'll be attracted to a religious process which incorporates much that is in the mode of ignorance.
So if the same person comes in the contact with someone who's a devotee or is in a...
Yes, if a person who's attracted to, or who's addicted to eating meat comes in contact with devotees, they may, by the power of that devotee's devotion, and it may be that person who's eating meat, that he also had some previous sukriti, and by the combination of the previous sukriti and the association of a devotee, his dormant Krishna consciousness may start to awaken. But generally, persons who are very sinful, they're not attracted to Krishna consciousness. They may be attracted to some religious system which encourages animal killing. But that may be also better for them than nothing. Then anyway, they're eating meat, so if they believe in God, that's good, and they pray to God. The problem is that because there's a strong admixture of the mode of ignorance, then that spills over into their religion is more, it spills or it manifests as an attitude in which their religion is more an expression of hatred toward others than love of God. There's no, practically outside of the Krishna conscious movement at the present time, no one even thinks of love of God. Or their idea of love is that we love God just like a young child loves the parent, give me this, give me that. That's the extent of their love. They just think of God as an order supplier. Not that they will give pleasure to him. They think that, well, he's superior to us, so we can't do anything for him. So they can't get very, which is true in a philosophical sense, but then in, when we actually develop bhakti, actually from the beginning, you know, bhakti means to please him, because he's also a person and likes to be pleased. So, anything else?
Maharaj, in the educating higher circle, there is one topic we always discuss, that if God created everything, then who created God?
If God created everything, who created God? This is a question, the educated higher circle, it's a stupid question, because that's the very meaning of God. If at all you're going to bring the word God, and God means who is the origin, who no one created. It's the very meaning of God. So to say who created God, if anyone created God, then he's not God. Well, that's another important point of the Jishta, being older than the oldest. Anadir Adir Govinda, he also accepts the position of the son of so many. Dasharatha and Kaushalya, of Kashyapa and Aditi, of Drona and Dhara, of Vasudeva and Devaki, of Nanda and Yashoda, of Jagannath and Shachi. So that's another mystery or sweetness of Bhagawan, that even though he is the older than the oldest, and he is better than the best, but he, out of his charming nature, he accepts a position of a subordinate position and appears as if he is junior to others. And Balaram is his elder brother. So he appears as if junior to Balaram, who's also Vishnu. So these are some of the mysteries of Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, by which Mukta Sangasya Jayate, by entering into the knowledge of Krishna, the subject matter of Bhagavan, then we become free from material attachments. Hare Krishna. I've finished there. Regarding prana, Jambavan, as recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Text 56, 26, says to Krishna, Jane Tvam Sarvabhutanam Prana Ojasaho Bhavam. You are the prana, the life air, and also the sensory, mental, and bodily strength of all living beings.